Hi everyone. As you will see in here in the following episode, we recorded this one actually in March, right after ETH Denver. The reason this episode took some delay is because we were waiting for the launch of our new and exciting developer program. So I'm happy to finally present to you the Superfluid Frontier Guild program for developers. This special program will see us stream more than $10,000 per month to all of you developers. So if you want to learn more about this program, you will find links in the description. You can also find a lot of info on our socials, be it on our Warpcast channel /Superfluid or on our Farcaster account at Superfluid. You can also find a lot of info on that on Discord, Twitter, and if you have any questions, feel free to DM any member of the Superfluid team. So without further ado, if you're interested in frames, if you're interested in Superfluid, if you're interested in Farcaster, I will let you listen to this episode with no one other than David Furlong, the founder of Frames.js.
Okay, David, thank you for coming. Welcome to the Devs Do Something podcast, podcast produced by Superfluid. How are you feeling today?
Thank you. Good. I'm just recovering from ETH Denver. It's a miracle I didn't get sick because I think everybody's been sort of going through it a little bit.
How is ETH Denver? How were the vibes? How did you feel it?
It was pretty insane. I think I remember last year going as a Farcaster builder, and most people when I said that I was building on Farcaster or on decentralized social would say, are you building on Lens? And I'd be like, no, Farcaster. And they'd be like, what's that? And now it's like, I'm just like standing on the street and I'm overhearing random people walk by in Denver that are gossiping about Farcaster. So definitely a huge energy change in the Farcaster ecosystem compared to last year.
Awesome. I'm very excited to talk to you all about this today. Before we go really deep into the subject about Farcaster frames and everything today, I would like to start with a little intro about me because I'm taking over Devs Do Something. So for those of you who have never listened to the podcast before, well, welcome. And for those of you who used to listen to the podcast earlier and used to find Sam, I am the new developer working at Superfluid and I'm taking over Devs Do Something. Hopefully you like me just as much as you liked Sam before. So this is great. I have some exciting news actually around frames by the end of the podcast for the devs around you, among you. So stay along and listen till the end. But before we get into frames, Farcaster, all of that, I would love to learn a little bit about how you got into this. How did you get into the space? How did it even start, like with all of this?
Sure. Yeah. So I first got into this space in 2014. I built like a hackathon project around funding GitHub open source issues with Bitcoin. Then I, like a lot of people, largely ignored the space for many years. I was sort of tinkering on the side and getting increasingly excited about this space as a way to shift where the internet is today. I think the internet today is quite a closed place. There's a lot of sort of corporate networks like Twitter and Facebook that have a monopoly on a lot of, or monopoly-like aspects on a lot of areas of the internet. And I think really crypto and Web3 has a huge opportunity right now to shift those sort of local maximas and sort of make something better. And so in early 2022, I started sort of having an opportunity to get out of my previous company. And I started looking at decentralized social. And Farcaster struck me as a team that was both very focused on the technology to bring this to mass consumer scale, and then also very thoughtful around early community and sort of product. And so I started building on Farcaster in sort of mid-late 2022. And I was building a client. It was called Discove, and it let people build custom feeds within the client so they could write their own algorithm, and then they could share that. So people could use this to sort of follow topics and build communities and explore different things that interested them. And this was before channels on Farcaster. Then I did crypto startup school in LA last year at the beginning. And during that time, I suggested to Dan, sub-communities would be a huge thing for Farcaster, and sort of that became channels. And then the other thing I ran into basically was that Farcaster was permissioned. I was an early stage sort of client. I was trying to grow. And I also had this sort of misalignment where as a client, you very much have to build a moat. Like every VC is like, where's your moat? Where's your moat? And you also feel it, right? You're like, the easier it becomes to build on this, the harder it will be for me to grow. And that's sort of misaligned when you're early in a protocol. You really want the protocol to also grow. And also, you want to be attracting people from outside the protocol into the protocol to help it grow. But the reality is it's much easier to try and get people already in to your app. So it's kind of quite adversarial if you're a client. And so I felt like I had an incentive not to open source things. And I felt that misaligned with my bigger goal, which was like, you know, I just want decentralized social to succeed. And so I pivoted partially because of this and partially because of some limitations I ran into while building my client. I pivoted to Mod Protocol about 3 days before Demo Day for Crypto Startup School. And Mod Protocol...
One thing though, Crypto Startup School is A16Z's accelerator,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's recently been rebranded to Crypto Startup Accelerator, I think. Yeah, so 3 days before Demo Day, I pivoted, and I pivoted to Mod Protocol, and I pitched interoperable mini apps for the internet as a protocol, starting with Farcaster. And so we started building this out, in part because of my experiences building a client. I tried to experiment with games and polls and videos and all these things, and there was no way for other clients to easily adopt it. So there's no standardized way to do it. And so we got to building this, and I told the Farcaster founders as much, you know, we're working on this thing. And then we started building this thing. So we got integrations into a bunch of Farcaster clients and figured out the initial SDKs and some of the hard problems, right? We were trying to avoid iframes and some of these sort of like bad performance, bad UX paradigms. And then late last year, we basically pitched Warpcast. We were like, look, here's a demo. We built a bunch of these initial mods, polls, games, NFT minting, all these things. And then we also wrote an improvement proposal for Farcaster to extend casts with these sort of rich casts through extending open graph of the URLs that are shared. And then we're gearing up for the launch and sort of waiting on Warpcast, like, will they join us in this? And then we got a heads up that they're launching frames. And we were like, what? Like, I thought this was a protocol, and like we would suggest something and we get feedback and then maybe it'd iterate and sort of become a new version and go with that. And so we were a bit caught off guard with that. But since that happened, we realized in many ways it's like one of the best things that could have happened for us, because since launching, frames have gone absolutely crazy in terms of both growth in Farcaster and growth in interest around frames. And now we have thousands of frames developers, and every ecosystem seems to be thinking about a frames first go-to-market strategy. And also we have built frames.js. As a sort of premier way for developers to build frames. And then the other thing we've done is that every ecosystem that isn't Farcaster has realized they want frames for themselves as well. And the way that Farcaster frames work is that they require a Farcaster signer, which costs money. And so if you want to integrate frames in your app and you're not on Farcaster ready, you either have to integrate and onboard all your users to a paid Farcaster account, or you can create an alternative way of making frames that doesn't require this. And so we saw this pop up with Lens and XMTP. And so we sort of decided to jump on this and call this thing Open Frames and work on a version of frames that works in any ecosystem across the web and not just Farcaster. And so since then, we've been building this out and, you know, trying to bring frames everywhere and also help frames developers build frames. And so it's been a crazy, crazy month for us. And now we have We have many, many, many more developers excited about Mini Apps and also building with our stuff than we did before. So in many ways, it sort of has pretty great silver linings for us.
Yeah, I can only imagine. It sounds like you are kind of like either you or your team or all of you are like bold enough to, you know, pivot at very unpredictable moments. Like after you do a lot of work and you're like, oh, I'm gonna have to do it again, and you're okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, the pivot during crypto startup school, I think retrospectively, it was the right call. I mean, obviously there are now Farcast clients that are sort of building very similar things, but I think on the whole, right, the go-to-market for a Farcast client that doesn't have an existing distribution is quite difficult. And, you know, we would be, you know, waiting till February the next year, like 8-9 months to have any possible distribution. And I think the alternatives there were a lot of people were telling us to aggregate, like, hey, you should like support Lens and other ecosystems. And we just thought that was not the way that protocols were going to grow. And then we also thought that would make the product experience more complex and less easy to make smooth. But in terms of the most recent sort of pivot, I almost wouldn't call it a pivot, right? Like we were building an interoperable protocol for Mini Apps to enable, you know, every sort of smart contract in every part of the internet to sort of compose each other in a new way. You know, we're still building that. I just think Frames is like a different starting point than we wanted. And in many ways, we spent months building out open source tooling and sort of go to market for it. And now we don't need to worry about a lot of that stuff. Now we have, you know, we have a market that's really trying to pull this out of us. And, you know, it's a bit overwhelming because it like Frames definitely have some form of like crypto product market fit right now where, you know, everyone I speak to is wanting them. And so that's a huge contrast to what we had with Mod, right? With Mod, we were like, struggling to get anyone to care about these things. We were like shouting, we're going to like Wharfcast, like, you know, please Mini Apps, like, please do it. Like, here's a way we can do it. And it was very much like, you know, very difficult to get anyone to build on either side of this, both integrations for Mini Apps and then also building the Mini Apps themselves. So,
yeah, no, it makes sense. Having a piece of something that is so successful is better than having everything of something that is going to be hard to get to the market, for sure. Let's backtrack a little bit, right? Like you talked about Frames and everything, and I assume that anyone who's listening to this podcast is already at the very least, heard of Frames. I'm going to ask you to do an exercise that may or may not be easy for you. I would love for you to... One, explain Frames for someone who is not necessarily technical. So I guess from a user perspective, or however you want to do it, like even for a kid, like not necessarily someone who's 5, but just someone who's not necessarily very technical with this. And also I would love for you to explain Frames for someone who is technical, because at the end of the day, the name of our podcast is Devs Do Something. So we don't shy away from going into technicals.
Sure. Yeah, so I think I'll start with the non-technical explanation. So you probably used a social app or a messaging app, Twitter, Facebook, any of those kinds. And when you post a link in those apps, it will show up in your post as an image with the title of the link you shared and then also the link itself. And so these are sort of like little cards that are shown in your feed or in your messages. And Frames are pretty much the same thing. All they do is they add buttons to these little cards that show up in your messaging or your feeds. And these buttons can do something on the website that you shared. And so some examples of this are, let's say you share a link to a blog. Now the blog can actually say, hey, there's a button to subscribe. And so instead of just getting a card with the link to the blog in the image, there can now be a subscribe button directly in your feed or messaging. And there's a couple of other things related to this, but that's sort of the essence of it. For technical people, frames are sort of like an extension of Open Graph, which is a widely used standard. And they enable websites to publish buttons that can do things on that website directly in the Open Graph metadata. And so they're sort of like an initial step towards mini apps, where you can, as a website, define these buttons. And then when the button is pressed, your website gets a post request that you can handle. And you can also respond to that button press with another frame. And so you can basically create a sequence of frames that the user can press through, all while being in a third-party app. And so with a couple of additional primitives around this, you can build almost fully featured sort of mini apps that are entirely run securely in a third-party app.
Okay, that's a very cool explanation. Even though, like, I've used frames before, developed frames before, I you know, it's great to see that you got a handle on it and you can explain it in that way. Before I get to what is exciting about frames, there's a lot of things that I think that are very exciting. Let's get to why it could, like, I'm going to try to steel man the argument of someone who might say that this is not going to work, right? And I saw that in your presentation at ETH Denver, there was a section where you said you were going to talk why frames are going to work as opposed to Facebook Marketplace. And I was excited. I was like, oh, I want to see this. And you didn't get the time to elaborate on that. So as someone who might be critical of frames, one might say, this has been tried before, right? Like, this has been tried at Facebook Marketplace. For whatever reason, it didn't work out. Why will it work out now?
Yeah, it's a good concern. So with Facebook Marketplace, Facebook monetized through ads. And that was really the primary and only business model that Facebook could pursue. And I think that frames, and particularly Web3, is monetizing through transactions and not through ads. And the reason it's able to do that is that Web3 is able to monetize off its users through transactions significantly better than Web2 could. So for an example, I think Twitter, in terms of their ads, are able to make around $25 per year per daily active user, which doesn't seem that much for a daily active user. I think Web3, if you already look at a lot of the apps, the sort of the amount of money an app can make off of like swap fees or transaction fees is an order of magnitude more. And so with sort of frames being a vehicle for transactions, they basically take any smart contract and make an interface for apps to sort of interact with that smart contract. It makes it much easier for apps to increase the number of transactions that their users are doing and also make money through either a referral fee or a tiny fee on top. And so I think the biggest reason basically is crypto brings sort of like financial rails to all the users, and frames bring sort of like interfaces for every transaction. And like together those things will let Web3 apps monetize significantly better than Web2 apps have been able to through ads. And frames are aligned with the monetization method, right? With Facebook, the incentive was to get users to spend as much time scrolling the feed and consuming ads rather than stuck in one place, basically with the game controlling what they see. That's sort of the reason I think it's so exciting, is because, you know, I think monetization through ads is actually pretty harmful because it's not aligned with the end user. It's led to a lot of problems with Web2 social, where apps have an incentive to basically keep the user in app as long as possible. And that's why, you know, a lot of us are addicted to social media, because it's sort of profitable to make users addicted. Whereas if we monetize through transactions, we're going to see maybe something else where, you know, it's like aligned to try and get people addicted to transacting and shopping. And that will have different consequences, but I think it will be more aligned with users.
That's a great point. Do you think that mini apps and, you know, frames today, but eventually mini apps as your vision, other people's, is their business model going to be aligned with Farcaster's business model? If there is one, right? Like, it's a protocol, but I don't know, Warpcast's business model, like a lot of the hosting platform, let's say, of these mini apps.
Yeah, like I think it, frames and mini apps align very well with clients. So, you know, typically social apps have had struggle monetizing, and that's because they monetize through ads. And a lot of times early days, you don't want to show ads because it reduces the user experience. So for a long time, social apps have sort of not been profitable early, and then late stage social networks like Facebook are extremely heavy on ads, where like every third post is an ad. Here, like if you're Warpcast, you're already taking all the referral fees for all Zora Mints. I mean, you're making a significant amount of money even with a relatively small amount of users, right?
What is a Zora Mint? Sorry, I'm just trying to get people who don't know anything.
It's an NFT. So users can buy NFTs inside Warpcast app. And Warpcast basically takes a small referral fee on each mint. I should actually look at this, but if you projected per daily active user how much is being made, and then you project this to like Facebook scale, it wouldn't surprise me if it's multiple orders bigger than Facebook. So I think with clients, it's very aligned with helping them make money. A bit like MetaMask makes something like $30 million a month through a small swap fee on user swapping.
Small.
Clients basically have all the transactions of users, not just swaps, right? They will have, you know, mints, they'll have game actions, like buying items. All those things will come through clients. In terms of alignment with Farcaster's monetization, so Farcaster charges for registration for new users around this like storage fee. So you basically pay for storage. Like Frames are bringing in a lot of people into Farcaster. I do think that Frames are going to succeed in a great way outside of Farcaster as well, in the sense that, you know, Farcaster is not the only sort of protocol in town that is trying to do decentralized social. And that Frames also make sense outside of decentralized social, right? Like I think sort of mini apps in general are a sort of unsolved problem of the internet, and Frames are sort of a very exciting approach to mini apps everywhere.
Yeah, that's definitely true, and it's been true even for us at Superfluid as we've been experiencing with a few frames. One of the challenges that we have with Superfluid, and I think a lot of crypto protocols have the same challenge, is we have these concepts that are a little bit, I guess, more complicated, intimidating. You know, if you think of automated market makers, the bonding curve, all of these concepts are a little bit now into, they made themselves into the zeitgeist of the crypto space, right? Like a lot of people know now what is an AMM, what is a bonding curve. It's easy for them to understand that because it's been kind of made part of like the crypto culture. Other concepts such as, you know, the concept that we have is Superfluid called money streaming, which is real-time transfers, are not necessarily concepts that the whole crypto space knows about. And so you want to give people that experience in a cheap and easy way inside a social app that is cool and funny and fun without them having to go through the docs, for example, right? Like you make them have a stream and show them a balance that comes into their wallet or something. And that's been, I think, a very cool aspect of this for us, is that we found a way where we can have people experiment what is a stream, with a low cost for us and in a very simple call to action for them. And it give, you know, you can gate it with followers. And I'm sure that many, many, many Web3 protocols have this, and not just Web3 protocols. Every company would love to have brand recognition, you know, educating the market about their solutions and things like that. And offering like these very simple experiments where you just can click inside the app without having to go out is incredibly powerful. And I think that's what really, really excites me about Frames.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a couple additional things I would add on there. So crypto's biggest problem so far has been any new project typically is on a new domain. And if you interact with a contract with an unknown domain, and it's a malicious contract, it can basically rug all your assets. And that is a massive, massive problem for crypto. One of the reasons I'm very excited about Frames is I think we will see a paradigm come up in Frames where there will be risk-free transactions where users can just do a transaction in one or two clicks and they have no worry that they're going to lose all their assets. They also don't need to do this like wallet connect on mobile flow where oftentimes it doesn't work. So there's a lot less friction on the transaction. And then basically the conversion on these transactions is going to be extremely high relative to existing conversion. And then you have in-baked distribution for these experiences in the social feed. And so in many ways, mini apps align a lot of parties' interests in crypto, right? It aligns the client through the monetization. It aligns like the protocol of the website through converting on their product. And it aligns a user by having frictionless, delightful, risk-free experiences. And so this is part of why we got into this. We were like, mini apps are like they're helping everybody. Like, I don't know who's losing out from them, right? And so that's sort of like some sort of magic glue for crypto, I think, that's been missing from it in order to get real adoption.
Yeah, no, definitely. So that's the part why mini apps are exciting in terms of like a UX perspective. So today, mini apps are, I assume, a vision, right? Where are mini apps today? So today they are Frames, right?
Yeah.
And so what's the state? Like, what's the current state of where we are today? And where do you think we should go? Where do you think this space is going? I would love to kind of explore a little bit about that.
Yeah. We explored a lot of this with Maud. So I think in terms of the interface of Frames, I don't think much is going to change. The reason being, simplicity is very powerful in that it has a very simple user experience for end users. And it also very nicely delineates what is the app and the frame. If you start to add too many options and make it too configurable, it may be hard for users to draw that distinction. And then there's a safety issue of like the user doesn't actually know they're not interacting with the app, they're interacting with the frame. So, you know, it could like ask your password and then you think it's the app asking, but it's not. And so because of the sort of security considerations and the sort of UX of social apps being very simple, I don't think much will change in terms of like a media. And then, you know, right now there's an optional input and optional four buttons. So I think what will happen is one, the sort of media will become richer. So right now it's an image. I think it makes a lot of sense to add video or audio there instead. And then the other thing that makes a lot of sense is having some sort of secure way to do games there where you can actually press in the image and that will be interactive. So you could have a little Pokemon, right? And then you press somewhere and your character will move there. And so I think that sort of interface is inevitable. And then there's a couple other things that I think will happen. One is that we will have some sort of full screen mode for Frames. I think this is kind of akin to sort of opening an external link with an in-app browser that has some like added context where it already logs you in. And we're seeing this with Frames that it's possible to like log you in. And eventually that may be packaged in a way that sort of is more like a full screen view inside the app instead of a link out. And then the other thing that I think is inevitable is that essentially a lot of frames will be created by frames themselves. So when you're creating a piece of content in a social app, you will be able to leverage frames in order to either change your text. So you could like use ChatGPT to generate an image or text or add some sort of protocol, right? So you want to create an NFT with your post, then you just use a Zora frame to create an NFT and attach it to your post. Or you want to create an event, well, you use like Unlock or events or something else in a frame and attach that to your post. And so I think there's a lot of social primitives like that, like location, like on-chain assets, like games that will let you create directly from the post you're in via a frame. And then the third big bet basically that we see happening and we sort of built out with Mod was that there's a lot of frames that you kind of want to trigger on any post. So you may want to like bookmark a post, or you may want to tip the author, or you may want to, you know, share it in a certain way or add it to a curated collection or something. Now you could use a bot, but I think a lot of this will actually happen through frames. And so you'll be able to sort of press a three dots on the post or the share button, and it will let you pull up frames that you've used frequently and sort of trigger them on that post. And those might have a slightly different interface because I think there are different constraints.
Okay, that sounds very exciting. And you know what I like about the way you talk about frames is that you are so much into the weeds, and you're a developer yourself. You know technically very much how these things work, but still you are very focused on the user's perspective. I think this is why a lot of this is also very much kind of working, because a lot of the people who are involved, even Farcaster as a protocol, as opposed to maybe other decentralized social protocols, is a lot of the design choices are made around, okay, how do we make this better UX rather than how do we make it do everything, right? Like, and that's very cool. And I will get to the developer experience in a bit, but I would like to talk a little bit about transactions, right? Like, that's something that we, as developer, which may be the bridge to the next part where I talk about developer experience. As developers, you know, especially in crypto protocols, you care about, you know, people doing transactions on your protocol through the frames. And I've been trying to kind of like hammer my mind through the subjects and trying to see, okay, how can we do this in a safe way? And it seems like there's going to be trade-offs that are going to have to be made. How do you see this? How do you see, what are the trade-offs that are going to have to be made to ensure the security and things like that, and ensure that we can do like various different configurable transactions?
Yeah, I have very strong opinions about this. So for context, right now in frames, you can specify a mint button. And it's basically constrained, but basically Warpcast is an app for some kinds of mints that it knows are secure. It allows users to mint in app using their own sort of off-chain currency called Warps. And for other mints, it basically redirects them to a wallet, a bit like Wallet Connect, in order to mint. And so the first way they do this with the Warps, users pay in Warps, so they don't actually have to care about the specific currency that is being charged for the mint. So they don't need to have like ETH on Base or ETH on Zora or any of those. The second important property of them is the user has no risk beyond the Warps. So, you know, let's say there's a malicious transaction in the mint, the user's wallet is not actually interacting with it. Warpcast has a wallet basically on their backend that interacts with it and mints into the user's wallet. And the third thing that's exciting is you don't actually have to go to another app. You don't need to go through Wallet Connect or this sort of like transaction simulation flow where you like have a warning for the user. They need to like understand something's happening and they have to go to this other app in order to complete. And so those three properties, I think, are pretty magic. And we need to bring them to all crypto consumer experiences. So you shouldn't have any risk. It should be fast and simple in app. And you shouldn't have to have additional context around like, oh, what's actually happening in this contract? Is it like stealing all my assets? And there is a current sort of spec for transactions that's coming out this week for frames. And it looks very similar to Wallet Connect. It doesn't use Wallet Connect. It uses a similar tool, but it basically has a transaction simulation screen and it links you to a wallet and you sort of complete the transaction in your wallet as a user and then you can come back. I think long-term, this is sort of a huge friction point because all of a sudden users, A, need to understand crypto's happening. B, they need to have the right assets on the right chain. See, they actually have risk, so they need to like read this transaction simulation and like make sure it's okay. Like, transaction simulation is also not foolproof, right? You can front run a sort of transaction like an MEV sort of sandwich and make it do something harmful as well. And so if you look at a lot of transactions right now, I think what we're seeing is that, you know, if you want to launch something that costs money, you can get people to mint an NFT. And then based on that, they're basically paying for some other service. And that can happen in one click instead of this sort of complicated flow. And that means they get much better conversion on that flow than the other one. And so my thesis is basically that the majority of transactions are on social are going to be either free or less than $10. And they're going to happen through this sort of mint with warps paradigm where the user has no risk. They don't need to switch apps. It's very simple and fast. And so I think Warpcast will expand mint with warps to more types of contracts. And other apps will copy this system and provide info around it. And what I'm really excited by is for the broader crypto ecosystem to adopt this. And I think the key thing for this is Frame sort of defined a subset of transactions that are secure and therefore are able to be embedded inside of another app. I think the same thing can happen for transactions on Ethereum. I think personally, like every transaction should have some sort of access control of like, hey, I'm executing this, but it has no access to my assets, or it has only access to this asset. But in lieu of that system, I think what we need to do is we need to find some sort of new subset of all smart contracts and transactions, which can be safely embedded and can be safely operated on, where clients can very easily say, oh, you know, this type of transaction is totally safe, and we can enable it to happen in-app through a Mint with Warp system without transaction simulation, without complexities of everything. And I think that's going to happen very soon. And I'm very excited by it because I think that's sort of a missing piece for mass adoption of crypto.
Well, when you say this, specifically when people are using the mint button to make users pay for other transactions, if this becomes the reality of most of how we interact with these things, either on social or otherwise in crypto, it would look in hindsight so obvious. It's like we've been looking for a solution for this for years, and it's just in front of our eyes. Just set up, a mint or anything for that matter that kind of pays for that transaction, and then you manage the rest of it on the back end side. Like you deal with it. Don't make the user deal with it. So that makes a lot of sense, I think. Okay, now let's move on to the developer experience around Frames. There are a lot of exciting things. I saw Frog lately that's been released by the WEVM team. I think that's how it's pronounced. I never know how it is. And you obviously are working on Frames.js, which is a framework that, at least in my experience, maybe it does other stuff, but the way I used it is to test Frames locally, and it's really cool. You can impersonate any Farcaster ID and test it. How do you see the developer experience today with Frames? How do you see it coming further? How do you see it becoming better, worse, later? What's going to happen with that?
Yeah, so I'd say there's sort of three main libraries right now. So the first being Frames.js. We do have like a full framework and a debugger, not just the debugger for building frames. We also have a library for apps to display frames in their app, which no other library has right now. And there's a growing number of apps that are sort of displaying frames as well. And with how fast the spec is moving, it's kind of hard to do that independently. And then there's Onchain Kit by Base. And then there's Frog by that team. Look, I think there's a huge amount of interest in frames, right? We have thousands of frames developers that have used Frames.js. And so it's to be expected that a lot of tools that want developers to use their ecosystem, whether it's sort of like Pinata for image hosting or sort of Base for sort of on-chain transactions, are going to come in. And I think we're still seeing the early adopters, right? If you see how much market share Base is claimed through just being very great to Farcaster developers with supporting them, all their competitors are going to eventually wake up and realize that they need a frames first strategy. And that really starts with being in the developer's pocket with the sort of library that they use to make frames. So I think it's early days there, and you know, more competition and more choice is good for the ecosystem and users. part of our goal is with open frames to bring frames to every ecosystem. And right now for developers, that can be a bit hard if ecosystems have different specs. And so Frames.js is a way for us to make it easy for Frames developers to build for multiple ecosystems. And Open Frames is a way for us to simplify it as well, so that instead of every ecosystem now going out and developing their own frame spec, they can come to us, we can chat with them, we can help them understand how they can best make use of frames, and then we can also make it easy for them to reach a wide audience of frames developers who already built frames and make it like one line for them to support their ecosystem. And so I think it's still early days, right? Like frames did like 10x Farcaster in many ways, and even more than that. But I think once transactions drop, once Farcaster grows a little bit more, we're going to see this be, you know, 100 times bigger at least. And so, you know, at the beginning of the year, I was a bit uncertain about Farcaster growth. I was like, okay, like they really wanted to grow now, and nothing's been happening. And now sort of frames has made them grow dramatically. And so I think if anything, this year is going to be great for everyone building both frames and on decentralized social. Like it's just the beginning, and we're going to see frames all over the internet pretty soon.
What could be done better for developers do you think maybe eventually we won't even need developers to build frames? Maybe like a no code type of platform?
Yeah, there are no code tools. Shout out Nainar and Airstack. They're both developing no code tools and a bunch of other teams as well. Personally, I think long term frames will be created by Frame. So a lot of no code tools will actually be frames that create frames.
Okay.
And yeah, it's a great way to like get people to easily create frames. So long term, I think there's going to be a lot of no code tools and things around frames. I think one of the biggest problems right now is that the spec is moving extremely fast. Mm-hmm. And it's A, difficult for developers to sort of update when there's backwards compatible changes. But B, the biggest one right now is Warpcast is basically just pushing the spec, but the spec is backwards compatible for all the frames developers, but it's not backwards compatible for all the apps rendering frames. And those apps are basically getting ignored. And there's already around 10 apps that display frames in their app. And I think by the end of the month, that will double from conversations I've had. And every time there's a new frame spec, the frames, the app needs to update right away. Otherwise, the frames just aren't going to work, right? Like if frames start displaying transactions and it's on launch day and your app is a frames app, but it hasn't updated its logic yet, then you just get a transaction frame. You don't know what to do with it. And so that's part of what we're trying to solve with Frames.js as well.
Okay, cool. Here's another issue that I don't know if it's an issue, but like something that I kind of thought about. It's a bit expensive to kind of like deploy each frame on its own like Vercel app, right? It's like it doesn't make sense to me that for each social media post, I need to set up a new Vercel deployment. Is there any hacks around that? Like, are there any other tools that are a little bit maybe less expensive or more are going to be built more for frames or things like that that you see in the horizon?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is a Vercel free tier. What we've seen is that there's a huge amount of bots that basically press on every frame to the degree of like some of our frames, we switched providers for hubs. And we immediately got a message from the new hub provider, like, we're getting like millions of requests every minute from Frames.js, basically because people had presumably set like connected it up to some sort of script that just presses on every frame. And so we're seeing sort of anti-bot measures to sort of prevent that billing from going crazy. So I think that's really the solution, because Vercel has a pretty generous free tier that will be enough for a lot of users. Beyond that, I think we'll see some sort of like frames deployment infrastructures. We've been looking at like how's the fastest way to deploy frames. And then obviously no code frames will also happen. But yeah, I think Vercel is still a great tool.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I talked earlier in the podcast about something exciting for developers. So we are planning at Superfluid. We do these wave pools. So Wavepool is used to be a monthly hackathon. Now we are going to do it less often, but with more, I guess, more prizes, more exciting stuff around it. So our next one is going to be around SocialFi, and it's going to be how to use, you know, Superfluid with frames and also SocialFi. So we will talk more about that at Superfluid. So on Twitter and other social media accounts. But yeah, that's the alpha. Talking about that, have you seen great examples of, you know, protocols in crypto that are building frames or have built frames that you think we should be replicating more? Obviously, the collaboration between Farkas and Zora and Base is amazing. Anything else that you see in the horizon that you've been looking? You're very much into this now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole range of categories, meme coins. So there's a bunch of DeGen frames. So DeGen infrastructure, meme coin infrastructure. The next one is like blogs and sort of third party content. So Paragraph Mirror have been absolutely killing it with the frames. You can sort of subscribe in one click, very powerful stuff. All the sort of on-chain assets and NFTs and sort of subscriptions, even paid subscriptions. I think Superfluid would be a great fit for Frame. Fabric has been killing it, for example. And then the third category that I think we've seen a lot of and will come more of is games. So a lot of sort of like games you play for 5 minutes every day. Framedl is like Wordle in a frame. It's really cool. I think we'll see a lot of on-chain gaming come and make their game work in frame. And that will basically allow them to have distribution for new users, an easy way for existing users to get notified and come back to the game every day, have sort of social leaderboards and social context, have sort of chatting around the game in replies and sort of start to build distribution. And so we'll see a lot of that. If you look at like WeChat mini apps, I think the sort of comparable categories are very similar. The big ones are like games, shopping, utilities, some like social things. So if you want to look at what's going to happen with frames, I think you can look at sort of Telegram mini apps, WeChat mini apps, even Facebook Marketplace apps from a long time ago. I think there's sort of a revealed preference of users around a bunch of these things that work very well in frame.
Okay. One of your visions, as you talked about, is this open frame, framework where they become kind of interoperable with other decentralized social. How do you see the space evolve after a while there, in terms of, well, developers, as you said, you talked about this a little bit, but maybe you can expand on it. And also, in terms of like user adoption, how is it going to evolve in the best and worst cases?
Yeah, I think, so Open Frames and Open Frames Protocol, we're kind of starting off with just extending frames to support multiple sort of authentication schemes in one way, right? So right now there's only Farcaster. Open Frames adds XMPP. And we're also adding some other ones pretty soon around just being able to sign frame actions with a wallet, for example. I think long-term what will happen is that, every ecosystem will have something like frames. So I think Discord apps are a bit like frames in some ways. Sort of Slack is very similar with their sort of mini apps. Telegram is very similar. Long-term, I think we will have a web-wide protocol for this. And we've mapped it out, and we think that there are some problems around frames where, you know, as a standard, it will be limited in the same way that many early internet standards sort of fell by the wayside and sort of didn't get traction. And I think there's an opportunity for this to be protocolized in a way that solves some of the limitations of a standard. And sort of we are looking into these problems and trying to figure out how we can position ourselves to sort of make frames as big as possible through this protocol. And so that's sort of what we're working on is looking into the future and trying to figure out what necessary infrastructure will be needed for frames. And then how can we make this into an open protocol and avoid it being captured as some sort of corporate network or sort of Web2 business that becomes this sort of value capture that sort of hurts the scale of frames. I think the comparable is like, you know, Twitter was originally supposed to be a social protocol. It was competing against RSS in many ways. It had access to capital and a couple of other things, and therefore is able to sort of out-execute and outgrow RSS, and therefore sort of RSS sort of fell by the wayside and is pretty tiny in comparison. I think frames will, something similar will happen, right? Some people will try and build sort of Web2 businesses out of it. And we're going to try and protocolize it and make it into sort of internet native infrastructure, a bit like sort of ENS or Farcast is trying to do with both the namespace and a social network. So that's how we see it playing out.
Okay. Well, that sounds very cool and very exciting. I for one think this has the potential to unlock a big amount of, for the first time in my life, and this is kind of embarrassing for the whole blockchain space and you know, me being part of it as well. But for the first time in my life, I find myself using an app every day, not for speculative or other reasons that are not necessarily just for enjoyment. So I just open Warpcast because honestly, the experience is better than Twitter for me right now. I'm not sure. Now, the only doubt I have for this to catch up, like, on the people outside the crypto space is all the examples of social apps that we saw caught up started with 12 years olds, not crypto bros. So that's the only worry I have. Do you see it like catching up, even though it didn't start like that?
It's a good point. I think Farcast is more akin to internet infrastructure. And a lot of it does not depend on a specific audience. Mm-hmm. I think if you start with an audience that is 12 to 16 year olds, then that audience doesn't build interesting things on top of your protocol. And it makes it harder for you to grow and sort of expand the network's effects of the protocol and get the ball rolling. I think we've seen this a little bit with Blue Sky, where the sort of go-to-market was like a sort of very broad, sort of more left-leaning politically audience. And as a result, I don't think we saw that much building on top of the protocol. There are apps, but in particular by starting with a developer community that I think will now expand from sort of crypto developers to Web2 developers as well, you bring in a lot of people who experiment and build new things on top of the protocol. And that's one of the biggest value propositions of a social protocol, is like anybody can build on top of this without fear of sort of getting rugged. And you can have many different experiences as a user, right? So if I go to Launchcaster, I have my social following there, and I have, you know, my posts, and I can interact with them directly there. And so this enables like these sort of ecosystem network effects where every app has a Farcaster feed. Or every app has your social graph and your following. And we're already seeing that, right? You sign up to Interface and you automatically can import all your Farcaster followers and your following. So, you know, that kind of network effect doesn't happen if your beachhead market is sort of 12 to 16 year olds.
Okay.
And I think there will be apps built on top of Farcaster that go after that sort of market. And we're already seeing a bunch of sort of short form video scrolling sort of mobile first experiences that look very different from Warpcast that are built on top of the social protocol. And so I think we'll see it.
Okay. Sounds good. Here's one last question. We talked a lot about the future and your vision of future, and really what I like about what we talked about is that you have your own vision that's not necessarily gonna pan out, but at least you have like a way of how you see the future, which is great. I would love to know how you see the past. So two questions regarding that. Like, one, in your own journey, personal journey, towards Frames.js and what it is today, what would you change in that in hindsight? And two, in the way frames are done today, or Farcaster or Ethereum or anything, if you had the choice and the option to change one thing in the design of these things, what would that be?
Very good question. For what it's worth, I believe my visions will pan out. In terms of the history, what was the first bit? Looking back, what would I change?
What would you change in your life, I guess? So we
worked on Mod for 7 months, and I told the Farcast founders in person I was pivoting to this and what it was. And I wish I would have just asked them sooner, like, hey, do you see this as being part of the Farcast protocol or externally, and really push them to make a decision? Because I think we could have sort of reached Frames adoption much sooner. And it felt like they only launched when we were ready to launch as well. And I think we could have saved ourselves some time there. I think if I could change anything about Ethereum or Farcaster, like, one, I think channels should be part of the Farcast protocol already. I think it's making it hard for third-party apps to integrate, and there should be some sort of way to do it now, even if it has to be upgraded in the future. Right now, it's sort of by API, and I think it's sort of a primitive that should be composable pretty soon. The second one is, I think Ethereum, the way you sign transactions with all access permissions, is crazy. I think the design is very much some sort of developer paradise, but not a developer who wants to build secure user experiences paradise. And so, I think this sort of change in access control, where every transaction would have some sort of access control, just like, you know, when you connect your Google account to a new app, it like says, hey, I want to use your calendar, and I want to be able to like read and write things, and like, or, you know, other apps do this too. And so, you know, with Ethereum, there's none of that, right? You're kind of like signing something, and it could take everything. And so I think some sort of access control system where a transaction could basically guarantee, hey, none of your assets besides your payment will actually be at risk, would be massive, and more granular sort of access control beyond that, right? Like, instead of transaction simulation, you know, this call, it needs access to your punk, and you can explicitly grant that or not. And then if the transaction tries to, you know, take away your Bored Ape, and it didn't ask for your Bored Ape, then it wouldn't work.
But they can just like fork the blockchain and go on Tinder. Are you implying that normal users are not able to fork the blockchain and go on Tinderly and simulate the transaction?
No, I'm suggesting, yeah. I'm suggesting it's terrible UX to have any risk. And even transaction simulation is insane. It's slow. You have to read it. Like, you have this worry in your mind.
Even and I like, don't, sometimes I don't know how to read like those Tinderly lines. It's like, yeah. Code. Yeah.
It's madness. I don't think this is the way. I think we need something different.
Awesome. Well, it was a really cool conversation. Thank you so much, David. And any last words, anything for the people who are kind of discovering this space, discovering Frames, discovering you, where they can find you, things like that. Feel free to share your thoughts.
Yeah, feel free to like follow me on Farcaster. My handle is @df. And then also, if you're interested in building Frames, happy to help. Message me or use Frames.js. That's framesjs.org. And then also, if you're an ecosystem and you're interested in seeing how Frames could work in your ecosystem, feel free to message me and we can chat open Frames.
Awesome. And if this conversation got you curious about Superfluid, head to superfluid.finance to discover a little bit more about Superfluid. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.